Welcome to another episode of Startup Health Now, the weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and changemakers reimagining healthcare. On today's episode, we're going to talk to our friend, venture capitalist, author, venture capital consultant, and entertainer, Lisa Soonan, who's the author of a new report coming out from the California Healthcare Foundation about the state of digital health accelerators. This is going to be a great episode.
Stick around.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. But I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
Welcome to Startup Health Now, the weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and changemakers reimagining healthcare. I'm Stephen Krein.
And I'm Unity Stokes.
And we're excited to be here today to talk to Lisa Soonan, not only a friend of ours, but an adjunct professor and author, a venture capitalist, and a venture capital consultant, who has recently written a report that's about to be published by the California Healthcare Foundation on the state of digital health accelerators. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Very nice to see you guys.
Great to see you. It's always fun to see you.
Thank you.
So, first, let's dig into more about your background, because you've been in healthcare for many years doing venture capital. First of all, why would you want to stay in healthcare that long? No, but seriously, what? Just a little bit about you and your background.
Sure. So I've actually been in healthcare for, I guess going on almost 28 years. Wow. I started off as a marketing consultant and later joined a startup that I helped grow from pretty close to zero to about $800 million a year revenue company in the managed behavioral healthcare area.
So you've been
area.
An entrepreneur too.
I've been an
this
entrepreneur too. I helped build that
I
company.
I missed that in your opening.
Yeah.
Ran sales and marketing for that company for many, many years. Ran parts of the operations. We took the company public to a great success. We took it private some years later, and then we sold it ultimately to our largest competitor. And after that, several of us who were affiliated around the fund started, or around the firm started the venture fund to invest in companies that had improved quality while reducing cost. Spent 15 years at the venture fund as a partner, looking at investing in healthcare IT, healthcare services, and some medical and digital health companies, and left at the end of last year to start my own firm, Venture Valkyrie, picking up on my blog and the other work I've done, and consulting now to healthcare companies, large and small, and to venture funds around the things that I've learned over the years.
So watching over the past couple of decades, not too many decades, but watching over the past couple of decades, what do you think the biggest difference is between what was happening 10 years ago or 20 years ago and right now?
Well, I mean, two things have changed that are pretty significant. Number one, if you look back 20 years in healthcare, the alignment of incentives was zero. I mean, there was nobody talking about, thinking about, or attempting in any way to align the financial and clinical incentives of patients, payers, and providers. And now there is a significant amount of work being done to do that, through not just through the Affordable Care Act, but of course that catalyzed it in many ways, but through the imperatives of business, I think, created incentives and imperatives, particularly economic ones, to start figuring out ways to get more value out of healthcare. So that's number one. And without that, nothing else happens. Number two, technology. I mean, when I was an entepreneur, those many years ago, there was very little technology used except for claims payment, which was lousy. And ironically, some of those same payments products are still being used to poor effect. And today we've got a wealth of technologies. You know, back then there was no internet, you know, really fundamentally in healthcare. Now we have e-commerce capabilities and internet capabilities and video capabilities and things that we couldn't really foresee, or at least didn't think would ever come to healthcare in any meaningful way. So I think the combination of changing incentives, changing financial structures, and technology has created a lot of opportunity.
So I have two really quick kind of questions around, do you think it's harder or easier to be an entrepreneur now in healthcare than it ever has been? And same thing with the venture capitalists. Like, do you think it's easier today or harder today to be operating as you know, those two types of stakeholders?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer for sure. I mean, I think it's easier right now to probably be an entrepreneur from a somebody paying attention to you standpoint, because for a long time there wasn't a lot of change in healthcare and there wasn't a robust startup community. It was dominated by big players, and it still is dominated by big players, but there wasn't really easy room for young startups to come in, and if they did, it was pretty rare, in small numbers. On the other hand, I think it's harder in some ways now because there's incredible competition for money, incredible competition for attention, and almost too many companies now that are getting started. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate them from each other. I mean, how many cloud-based, big data, blah, blah, you know, things have you seen where you can't even tell them apart, you know? So in a way, it's become harder.
Harder from the
entrepreneur's side, because to distinguish yourself, to solve a significant problem. So, you know, probably good and bad. From the venture side, it's also good and bad, I think. Back then, when we started the venture fund back in 1998, it was the time when everybody was coming away from healthcare. Actually, there were venture funds shutting down their healthcare teams, you know, letting them go, because there was never going to be an opportunity in healthcare. It was a bad market opportunity. There were no new ideas, and there never would be. So it was hard to raise money around healthcare in that time. It wasn't life science. I was focused on health IT and health services. So that was considered to be, you know, kind of the bottom of the barrel as healthcare or as venture capital goes.
And all the money was flowing into every other
and
sector.
All the money was flowing into either life sciences and med tech, but mostly into tech and to other things. Today, you got a lot of interest in digital health, health IT, health services, but it's pretty polarized. It's either late stage, you know, people looking to invest money in later stage ideas, or really early stage, like what you guys do. And there's not a lot of money in the middle. So it's very hard for companies, once they get started, to continue to operate with capital. And it's very hard for the venture funds to figure out how to sustain survival in that middle place.
So LPs want. What are the VCs doing? They're going earlier and later?
Yeah, they're going earlier and later. It's like somebody dropped oil into the water and everybody went to the sides, you know? And there's very little in the middle.
Do you think it stays that way for the foreseeable future? Or do you see it changing with new entrants or new, you know, focuses of some of these firms?
I think it'll change over time because it seems like there's going to be a multiplicity of very early stage firms, and the natural tendency is to go later over time. So I think ultimately the new crop of early stage firms will start to move to a little bit later stage
over time.
As the market matures. And so, you know, hopefully companies that are worth supporting will outlast that trend, you know, long enough to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I interviewed Steve Case at the last summit in Washington, and we were talking about the similarities between the computer industry in the 80s and the healthcare industry today, where when you look back, there were companies that were like print driver companies and word processing companies and spreadsheet companies. And you kind of looked at them and were like, oh, there's too many of them and there's no differentiation. And yet it was kind of the right place for the industry to be at the time before it emerged. And I think the same thing happened with the internet and e-commerce and lots of other sectors or subsectors. So right now in healthcare, when you look across and you start naming different types of clusters of companies, I think it's hard to see the forest through the trees here with this. But at the end of the day, I think it's probably, it seems like at least the natural place for the industry to be when it's at the beginning of such a transformation.
Yeah, I mean, I think you end up with a lot of things that are really products or features and not companies. And I think at the beginning, particularly of the internet evolution and revolution, there was a lot of that too. You know, things that were sort of interesting but couldn't be a company unto themselves. And then ultimately there was consolidation among those ideas. You know, rationality to a certain extent.
So you just authored this great report on the state of accelerators in digital health with the California Healthcare Foundation. Love to learn more about that. And I think this is the second time this has been published, but it's a follow-up to something that was, the first one came out, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago,
and you
yeah.
didn't do that one.
No,
that
I didn't.
Was done
no,
by
I
someone,
didn't.
That was done
yeah,
by somebody
Aaron
else.
Aaron Apodaca did that. Really good report about sort of the emerging idea of healthcare accelerators, something which had been well known in technology prior to that. That's around the time when Startup Health and Rock Health and a few of the others were getting off the ground. And so I think that report, which is available on the California Healthcare Foundation website and is called Greenhouse Effect, is was a very interesting sort of snapshot in time of the emergence of this idea of the health and particularly the digital health accelerator. And so 2 years later, the market's changed dramatically. There were probably about 20-ish accelerator type programs for healthcare at the time that report was written. And my findings were that there are probably close to 100 of them now.
So let's use that as a framework. So how are you defining accelerator? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's often, you know, intertwined is incubator, accelerator, and very little differentiation, I think, up front to people understand about how there's so many different flavors of them.
But
how
corporate are you, accelerator.
Right. And yeah, so how are you defining the market a little bit and kind of helping people understand not only what it looks like a little bit, but why it kind of looks like it does?
Well, I think it's hard to distinguish between incubators and accelerators very effectively because sometimes people call themselves both. And they're somewhat intertwined, or they have both kinds of programs, but the line between us is hard to find. For me, the way I ended up defining it or looking to define it was separating those things that are really idea generation labs that then incubate their ideas that they came up with largely by themselves or maybe with partners, you know, just to figure out if there's an idea worth pursuing there. Accelerators, I think, generally tend to be organizations where people have come up with an idea already and maybe even formed a company or started to and come into another place to bring expertise, capital, opportunity to the fore. So that's the way I sort of separated them in my mind.
And for this report, just for context, a little bit about the methodology and who you talked to develop the report.
So I talked to about 20 or so actual leaders of accelerators. I talked to probably 15 or 20 entrepreneurs who'd been through accelerator programs or more than one accelerator program. And I also spoke to a number of sponsors, companies that fund accelerator programs, big corporations that put money behind them.
So what are some of the big findings? What did you learn?
Well, aside from learning that there are more accelerators than police sirens in New York City, I found really that they've kind of split off into six different types. There's kind of an independent type, what I would consider you to be at Startup Health, independently run, not with a particular agenda that's tied to any particular company, independently financed with shareholders alike. There's enterprise-based programs. Generally, those are corporate-owned programs like Sprint has, mm-hmm. like Johnson & Johnson, J&J, Janssen have. United Healthcare has one. You know, they've wholly owned within their program. There are accelerators now that are focused specifically on products, sort of enhancing the ecosystem, a particular product like Athena Health has, to fund and support companies that are building off their APIs, or sector-specific, like Aging 2.0, focused on a particular sector of the industry, in that case, the longevity economy. There's a fourth, which is sort of an economic development model, where they're really the primary purpose is to build jobs in a community, mm-hmm. and so they incubate companies in order to create new jobs in that community and keep them there. There's university models, where they're wholly owned by university organizations and are really there for the purpose of creating companies out of the ideas that are developed within the university, or even from the incubator to the accelerator.
Tech
within the
transfer
university.
Going on, yep.
Yeah, more, you know, it's kind of like super advanced tech transfer. Yep. Transferring it to itself in a different form. I know if you guys saw that today or recently, University of California system announced a $250 million venture fund that they're now going to use to fund the companies that come out of their incubators and accelerators. Yeah. So it's interesting times. And then lastly, what I would call collaboration platforms, which are not really accelerators exactly, but they sort of have some of the same features. But they're really in the business of matching startups with big companies that have particular problems to solve, to partner to the pursuit of addressing those issues, but they have some support and
A pilot health tech?
Yeah, or NYC, like a Health Excel is another one. Avia is another one. Yeah. Programs where they really start from the other side of what's the problem they're trying to solve for a client and bringing companies in and incubating them or accelerating them or what have you to help address those particular
So when you
needs.
Look at your 100 plus, how do they fare out percentage-wise across them? Is there one group that seems to be more prominent or prevalent than the others? Or?
I didn't sort that way, to be honest with you. Probably you could easily do that by looking at the database that California Healthcare Foundation is going to publish on their website and make accessible to people. I think there's fewer of the product and sector type. There's a lot of the economic development and university type. There's probably only, five or eight worthwhile sort of the independent style organizations, although there's probably more than that in existence. Very few of the collaboration platforms, 2, 3, 4, I don't know, that I've seen that are organized in a way that would, suggest it's like an accelerator.
And are some of the characteristics of these, there's short-term, there's long-term, what are some of the characteristics mm-hmm. that you notice between these different types?
They vary quite a lot. They vary based on whether they're, you know, sort of co-located models or virtual models, where, you know, co-located and everybody works in the same room at the same time, or virtual, they come and go, you know, or work within their own communities and come together occasionally. They vary based on their geographic reach. There's local ones, there's national ones, there's international ones. They vary based on the sort of the selection process, what they're looking for. Again, that's back to the type a little bit, but also sort of thinking about the end goal for the organization based on the metrics they use to measure. They vary based on length of the programming. So there's some that are like the traditional 90-day class model, you know, the classical Y Combinator type model. And there's some now that are, you know, like Startup Health 3 years, and there's everything in between. You know, Launchpad in San Francisco is a one-year program. I've seen everything from 3 months to 9 months, a year, 3 years, and everything in between. And they also vary a lot based on the equity or investment or loans or what have the amount of capital available to the companies that they bring in and how they invest that capital. So there's just tremendous variation. I think, you know, entrepreneurs need to really understand that before they sign up for a program.
That's what I was going to go. So you take some of those pieces and you just unpack long term. What does the report have any conclusions about the value proposition when you're looking at giving up equity in your company or sharing equity, or you're looking at, you know, picking up and moving your family or any of these? Like, how does this report kind of guide or lead the entrepreneur, if it does at
all? Well, there's actually a checklist that's going to be available, not in the report, but on my website at venturevalkyrie.com about what entrepreneurs, you know, what the categories to consider. Mm-hmm. But I think the most significant sort of conclusion from that is you really need to consider those things. Mm-hmm. Not so much that anyone is better than the other, but it really depends on who you are and what you're trying to achieve. And some of the accelerators are clearly more approachable and appropriate for those who've never built a company before and done anything like that. And some are really better for people who have a lot of experience and are looking to round that out with something else. So it's very personal, I think. The thing about co-location versus geographic, you know, if you're 42 years old and you have 3.5 kids and a dog, it's not easy to drop out of society for 90 days and move to wherever.
Right.
You know, you've got to be practical about it. But you might if there was something in it that was worth it and you didn't like your dog. I don't know. But I think, you know, it's very personal and it has to be considered. I think that's the most important conclusion, as opposed to just sort of jump into the one that you heard of.
So do you think in healthcare, so, you know, I think outside of healthcare, there's a lot of, if you have 100 in healthcare, they have hundreds and hundreds outside of healthcare that, you know, have these short-term accelerators. Do you think healthcare requires or has a prevalence towards leaning towards having a reason they're long because of the nature of how long it takes to build a company in the sector versus outside the
sector? I've never really seen longer-term accelerators in the tech world that have sort of risen to the top. So is that because healthcare takes longer to build a business in healthcare?
I think so. I mean, you know, companies in healthcare from start to end, and assuming the end is good, you know, an exit, a positive exit of some sort, take, you know, 10 years oftentimes. It's not atypical. It's not conducive to the typical venture model or the old school venture model. It's not conducive to the short-term accelerator model in many cases. It depends on what you're after.
Sure.
I think if you're after 90 days of partnerships and some particular training, that might be fine, you know. And if you're after, you know, deeper sort of, you know, development of the company, it's not going to fit because companies take a long time to mature in healthcare.
So what's your take as looking at this as a venture capitalist from the VC's perspective on the pros and cons or the value proposition of these? It sounds like these weren't around, I don't think they were around from my research, you know, 20 years ago or 28 years ago. Why are they here now? And do you, as a VC, do you think they're valuable and relevant? What's your personal view on this?
You know, I think the why now is back to some of the other issues we discussed in the marketplace, sort of the availability of technology, the sort of excitement about the changes in the healthcare system, the opportunity to make change in the healthcare system for the first time in a really long time. It's just massive disruption going on in the traditional players' worlds, and it's a great opportunity to take advantage of that. There's also a big gap in the venture world, you know, funding for young companies. And so this is a way of filling that gap to a small extent, but still to a real extent. And I think it's also the bridge for a lot of folks coming from outside of healthcare to come in for the first time. So the tech guys that are interested in writing in and solving the healthcare problem, rightly or wrongly, this is a way for them to get connections and relationships and learnings, you know, about healthcare that they couldn't get from, you know, being over in Facebook or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? It depends, as always, right? On the one hand, it's great when companies come into you to pitch that know how to pitch, that know how to tell a story.
Know how to package themselves and articulate their vision and articulate their goals and articulate their plans.
And that they're substantive in addition, you know, that they've thought through it and it's meaningful. Great packaging is nice, but there's got to be something inside when you open it. And, you know, if you're in a good program, that will help with that. And you get people coming in that have spent real thoughtful time, you know, building their story and building their product and idea. On the other hand, the multiplicity of these programs has created a glut of companies, I think. You know, it's saturated. And every day, you know, you see a story about a new accelerator, another program, and they've got to fill those spots. And they get filled sometimes with not always great companies, you know, and or not always original ideas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thus we see 10,000 of the same thing, you know, and that's not good for venture capital or healthcare. It just, disperses the capital, disperses the thinking, disperses the
customers.
Do you think
there's more entrepreneurs moving into healthcare, or it's there's just more recognition of these companies now and it's sort of consistent? There's the same number of companies being built.
No, I think there's definitely more now. Definitely more. I'm amazed at how many companies are coming out, you know. And I think it's because you have, for the first time, you know, this last 5 years or so, people coming from other industries to address the healthcare opportunity based on what they see driving change.
That's what we see. I mean, we're always, instead of people building coupon companies and mm-hmm. stalker apps, and they're coming over, a whole new type of talent is coming over to healthcare.
Right.
Yeah, actually, it seems like there's both people outside of healthcare coming in. There's also people in the healthcare industry, physicians and clinicians and others, becoming entrepreneurial.
I agree.
And
yeah.
So you've got this dynamic. I think it's very different, which is mm-hmm. not your standard or typical obvious entrepreneur.
Well, it's so funny. I mean, I always have said before, all you need is like a Starbucks card and a golden retriever and a Mac laptop, and you're an entrepreneur. You can start a company.
Okay, you said Mac laptop.
Yeah. And, it's...
You need a strong constitution, too.
A strong constitution.
It's very lonely.
Yeah, exactly.
You
need to be able to deal with rejection and no sleep. But seriously, it's gotten very easy to start a company.
Right.
It's not good. It's not easy to make a company.
Yeah. Well, it's cheaper, faster, and obviously within the reach of more people to start them. It's still expensive. And
it's much easier to promote your idea across social media and, you know, to get your word out and the like. And you could go to a digital health conference every day of the week if you really wanted to. So you can get a platform to speak from, but you know, not every idea should be heard.
Yeah. So two other things that I wanted to find out if it was addressed in your report, which is one around the value of a peer network. So mm-hmm. the notion of a lot of what you've got happening in healthcare is the unknown, and mm-hmm. people are trying to figure this out every day, right? So you're trying to figure out what mm-hmm. works, what doesn't work, and sometimes just learning through what organizations are willing to pilot, which mm-hmm. business models are working, where's the money flowing, how's everything changing. Mm-hmm. Some of that is only going to come from real, you know, data from the entrepreneurs and being close to the entrepreneurs. What are you seeing, and was that one of the elements of criteria as people look across accelerators about the value of the peer network?
Yeah, when you ask the entrepreneurs what's the most important thing they're after when they select an accelerator, that's the answer they give you. It's not capital, it's network. Mm-hmm. It's not just peer network. By peer, I think of other entrepreneurs to, you know, bounce ideas off of, but it's the entire ecosystem network around what they're trying to do. So interestingly, every one of them said, you know, hands down, was that is the most important thing I'm looking for. You know, people to talk to from my industry, people I can learn from, customers to, you know, create pilots with, what have you, other entrepreneurs to share ideas with. And they also almost all said they rarely got that level that they really wanted out of the network effect. That it was very hard for the peer work to happen because people were heads down, you know, trying to build their companies, so they didn't really interact the way that they had hoped that there were lots of sponsors involved from healthcare companies that were great customer potentially, but they oftentimes weren't really engaged. They were just sort of there for the demo days or whatever. Sometimes they would let you in for a pilot. Sometimes they wouldn't. Oftentimes, if they did, it was really no customer opportunity.
Was that across the board with all six types and pretty consistent
much
feedback?
That the network concept's great and desired, and it's not entirely well affected yet.
So what's some of the other feedback? I'm very curious what the entrepreneurs are saying about this and how helpful it is or isn't.
I think they actually felt it was very helpful. I mean, universally, they thought it was helpful, despite maybe some perceived shortcomings in some instances that every entrepreneur I spoke to said they would do it again, and they would probably pick the program they picked again. So there's a lot of loyalty to the experience that they had. The issues they care about are, the network effect, the perception that the brand is good, so it conveys some quality of brand to them. In some many cases, the equity or cash available to them mattered a lot. In some cases, it didn't. In some cases, they don't want that. They don't want to be tied to an entity per se. Certainly, the program services offered, some really care about co-location and space for free, and some don't. It depends on the sort of situation.
Where did investment dollars rate in that?
It was really bifurcated. It was really kind of interesting because there was a lot of folks that said, I need that money. That's really important to me. And the more I can get, the better. And some folks said, I don't want to share 6 or 8 or 10 or 5% of my company for a few months of effort. I just don't, So it really depended. There was no obvious variable on which that turned. Maybe if there was one thing, I'd say the more experienced entrepreneurs wanted equity less because they felt like they could get other places. But by and large, it was kind of all over the map, and it just really depended on circumstance.
And so when you think about the success criteria of mm-hmm. how you're going to determine or even recommend determining what's a successful accelerator, mm-hmm. what's not, what do you think it ends up kind of ferreting out?
Well, I think what most people tell you is the answer, not all, but many people tell you is the company's ability to raise additional capital. The next round of financing or the first round of financing is how they measure success in their accelerator. And some people will tell you that is a spurious correlation. It's not important.
It's interesting. So we focus a lot on four areas, but customer development, capitalization, mm-hmm. Or commercialization, yeah. customer development's one of the most important. Fundraising, capitalization, second to that, because mm-hmm. we're really trying to help build businesses. Did that come up at all as one of the other measurement criteria or things that...
I mean, the ultimate measurement criteria is value creation that you can measure when you exit.
Yep.
Right.
So equity value right. in the business. And
yeah.
that's the ironic thing is, as you know, our program is based on this lever of 2 to 10% equity and based
right.
upon how far along the company is in its development. And the simple way we measure it ourselves is this notion of can we increase the equity value and are we increasing the equity value
right.
of that company? And it's interesting because there's a lot of commoditized stuff out there that you can look at. At the end of the day, if it moves the dial 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6% when all is said and done,
right.
then it was worth it. And so it's interesting that does that report conclude that or are you concluding that framework of all that really matters at the end of the day is did it increase equity value at the end of the day?
Well, I conclude that from my own personal opinion.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that would agree with that, that I spoke to, particularly on the sponsor side, that felt, and some of the accelerators too, that felt that really the only way to measure success in the end was the ultimate equity value. And if did you create something of value? Not necessarily that there's a number, but that there was something of value created as opposed to nothing of value created. Or something of meager value created. And that was the proof in the pudding, which is, it's kind of diffuse from the beginning of the company's life to the end where that value creation occurred. But certainly it's fair to attribute it to how they get off the ground, at least in part.
And how many of the entrepreneurs recognize that versus, both the sponsors or the investors you spoke to?
Well, I think the entrepreneurs recognize the importance that when they join up with an accelerator, it creates value for them. I mean, I think that they don't wouldn't give up, unless they're incredibly unsophisticated, which some probably are, they wouldn't give up the equity if they didn't think they were getting something of value for it. And it has to be a value that's greater than what they gave up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I realize the price and the sort of theoretical value of their equity when they join an accelerator is approximately zero. But nevertheless, they think it's a lot, because they're putting in their life
sure.
into that. And so
sure.
I think... for them, that's a really important measure. But in the short-term proxy measure that they're using is the network, the customer accretion. You know, am I getting customers as a result of this experience? You know, is it pivoting me ahead? Yeah,
signals of success.
In the process.
Did you see any, or did you guys look into the depth of the teams? Actually, whether these programs are run by real full teams or they're run with, you know,
not really. And clearly, it's also all over the map. I mean, there's some teams at accelerators that have great entrepreneurial experience, but very little finance or venture or other world experience mm-hmm. in large companies. There's some that have, you know, tremendous amount of experience on the corporate side and absolutely no entrepreneurial experience whatsoever. There's guys from the venture world, the finance world that don't really have operating experience. There's all, you know, every flavor, right? And I think the ones that seem to be at least perceived as the best, you know, rightly or wrongly, again, we haven't seen the results because none of you guys have been around long enough, are ones that have multidisciplinary teams, you know, a lot of experience. One of the big challenges is a lot of the groups were criticized for having tons of tech experience and not enough healthcare experience around the table, or the opposite.
You're saying the teams at the accelerators.
Yeah. You know, lots of healthcare experience, not enough tech experience, you know, real tech experience, hardcore CTO types and things like that. So
is that what the sponsors are saying, or
that's what the entrepreneurs are saying?
That's what the entrepreneurs are saying.
Yeah. So I mean, finding that balance is critical to a good program. And I think as these programs evolve, that'll be one of the things you find. Just like in any management team, you find you have to diversify and evolve and broaden your skill set to be successful.
Yeah, no, I mean, we looked at this, you know, being entrepreneurs ourselves for almost 20 years, you know, looking at what you really wish you had when, mm-hmm. you know, when you go back to your first startup that you were involved with, and you kind of wish you had, you know, the elements of, you know, a real leadership, the ability to build a leadership team and understanding of the importance of a leadership team and the importance of packaging and then having substance behind that packaging and even positioning in your value proposition in the right subsector and how much equity value is controlled there. And then when you look at commercialization and capitalization, they are all different areas. Mm-hmm. And over the life cycle of a startup, whether healthcare or not, it's critical that at each stage it changes, right? When you're mm-hmm. at the idea phase of a company, all four of those things are different than when you're at the next level and you're actually raising capital and you've got traction and validation. And when you're growing or scaling, each time you kind of revisit the stage, each one of those four areas becomes critical.
Right.
How do you think, or maybe you didn't conclude this in the accelerator thing, when you look out 3, 5, 7, even 10 years from now, what do these programs look like and how do you think they evolve?
That's definitely in there. One thing I want to make sure I mention while we're on the topic of measuring success is the success metric is defined somewhat by the type of accelerator that mm-hmm. you've got. So mm-hmm. if you're primarily an economic development accelerator, your metric is jobs.
Jobs.
Right?
Yep.
So, you know, that would be the thing they care about, value creation of companies notwithstanding. If you're a university accelerator, what you care about is tech transfer and licensing of IP, mm-hmm. you know, in many cases, not necessarily returns to the university. So it's all in the eye of the beholder to a certain extent what the measure of success is. I mean, I think in the commercial sort of independent accelerators, clearly the conversation we had is right on, but a bit of it depends on who you're talking to. With respect to where the accelerators are going, I mean, it's a great question. I don't know if you can go from 100 to 200 or 500 or 1,000, but geez, I hope not, you know, because it's getting ridiculous.
20.
Yeah, I guess I'll have another report to write in 2 years or something. but I think that the truth is you'll go back in size. I mean, I think there's going to be
some consolidation,
some, you know, natural death. Darwin is a theme throughout this accelerator report, and I think it's a very apt theme, you know, kind of survival of the fittest and importance of specialization and how specialization makes you thrive. I think that...
Do you think they remain a key part of the growth cycle of launching, building, growing companies, or what's your personal take on it?
I think as long as technology is a big piece of the story, yes. Because I think technology is used to this. You know, the technology world likes this accelerator model. I think if you went to the true healthcare companies, by which I mean companies that, you know, think this
like
is
big hospitals.
Like think this is technology, they might let them go away because they're not used to that method of spurring innovation. They're getting used to it,
right.
And some of them are even saying, "My innovation program is I've sponsored an accelerator," you know, which mm-hmm. you know is a little scary. But I think they're here to stay for some significant amount of time. except for the fact that they start evolving into something else, which is, I think, the biggest trend you're starting to see is that a lot of accelerators are starting to evolve into sort of what looks and smells like venture funds. So
does that put them at odds with the venture funds then? And you end up having, you know, how does that play into?
I don't know. I don't think it puts them at odds because most of them don't have huge amounts of capital. So they're small venture funds or early stage venture funds or micro funds, seed funds, call it what you will.
Bridging the gap.
Yeah, between, that help companies get started, but aren't the ones that are going to carry them through to the end if they need $60, $70, $100 million to get to where they're going.
So a couple other areas I want to touch on. One is global versus regional. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a lot of regional accelerators. Everything you, almost every one of the categories you mentioned, I think most of them seem like they're regional in nature. Mm-hmm. Some of them where they cross over to customer types probably have more of a national. But how much of this is a global phenomenon versus a national versus a regional?
Well, I think the global phenomenon is really here. I know that Startup Health has talked to many global companies and worked with many global companies. So have a lot of the others. And I think there's a growing recognition that the world does not end at our, shores, surprisingly to many, and that there's a lot of opportunity for innovation and maybe even better sort of environmental circumstances for healthcare innovation in other countries sometimes because the regulations are less stringent or the incentives are aligned by virtue of the government payer situation or whatever.
Well, you look at India and consumerism and you look at Israel and the technology and the need to connect to a market and you've got all of these entrepreneurs around the world thinking about their particular country or the needs in the country, but so much of it's applicable outside.
And, they have mobile phones in other countries at a higher level than we do oftentimes and no landlines, right? So they use mobile phones for everything. And, I think those people in particular are interested in finding ways to apply healthcare. I was down up at wherever I was in Dublin, Ireland at a Health Excel event. And, there were people there from all over the world presenting their mobile health solutions, Africa, South America, you name it. I think it's eye-opening. I mean, I'm going next in a couple of weeks to judge a Dutch accelerator, program, and then some other one at some other country. It's like really quite interesting what's going on out there. It's a little bit repetitious, as you look at each country, they're developing yet another. Each country is developing.
Well, everybody deserves to have you coming, judging and entertaining their audiences.
I'm waiting for the accelerator in Fiji to invite me to come and present. If you're out there in Fiji, I'm here waiting for you.
So a question, because I'm interested to find out if you looked into the non-healthcare accelerators, the Y Combinators and Techstars and some of the ones that are more, cross-sector generalists.
I really didn't, because life's too short and it would take me 50 years to find them all if you continue on.
Right.
But no, this was really an exercise in looking at what's going on in healthcare per se. I mean, clearly in tech, we're starting to see some of those guys led in a healthcare company or two now and again. And they call it a technology company that focuses on healthcare as opposed to a healthcare company that uses technology, right? So we're going to start to see those lines blur more and
more. How do you think that plays out a little bit? Because if you're an entrepreneur and you just said the priority is the network up there, how does that play into the depth of the networks of these general accelerator programs?
I guess it depends on what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a bunch of really smart healthcare people that really need to know the tech world, that's probably great for you. If you're a bunch of tech guys that don't work in healthcare, that's probably terrible for you. So I think, this is very, very personal. I mean, about what you're building and who you are and what your experience is and what your gaps are and finding a way to fill those. Not about that there's any, hard and fast rule.
So what surprised you doing this? What did you discover that you just weren't expecting?
A couple things, I guess. One, just the number of programs and that they're still, growing. I mean, not in healthcare, but there's, in tech, there's programs on boats, on trains,
on
planes, in a box, and with a fox. I mean, it's unbelievable, right? just the amount of programs and the way they're trying to differentiate themselves, it's mind-boggling, And, as I talk to people and they'd say, oh, I know another one, that's out there. I was amazed by the number that really were there. We thought, we started writing the report that maybe there were 50, which was, seemed like insane. And it was much closer to 100. I think the other thing was the sponsor's view. Now we're talking large venture funds, large corporations.
Such as?
Walgreens, United Healthcare, Johnson & Johnson, you name it. Big healthcare systems, provider systems, insurance companies, players in the, you know, overall manufacturing world who have put money into accelerators, and sort of the disconnect between what the accelerators want from them and what they think they're there for seemed a little scary to me. I think that, and this is, you know, these are gross generalizations because obviously individually certain companies had very specific and thoughtful goals. But there were definitely folks who said things like, we joined an sponsored an accelerator to sort of check the innovation box, because that's going to be our innovation strategy. And when you probed into that a little bit, what does that mean to you? It was kind of like nothing. It didn't mean anything. I mean, frankly, it meant
in terms of moving the
dial. That's what I tell my boss when I tell them I, you know, put money into an accelerator. This is our innovation strategy. How does that translate into them ever using any of those products or services? It may or may not. Mm-hmm. That they were there largely, a lot of the sponsors were there largely for the marketing, you know, and largely for the self-promotion and for the branding opportunity and to learn and to meet people, but not necessarily because they were looking for solutions out of those accelerators to use.
Do you think that signals there's still this innovator's dilemma potential where startups overtake some of these established healthcare players over the next decade or?
I think that, but I'm not sure I think that this is why. I mean, I do believe that if you look at history tells you that big companies don't survive long-term.
Creative destruction
of
the industry.
Replaced by others. Yeah. And now it looks like the timeline that occurs in is accelerated massively. So if you look at the Fortune 500, I wrote a piece on this on my blog recently about how I can't remember the number now, but it's something like 427, or don't quote me on the exact number, of the original Fortune 500 no longer exist. That's a fact, because they died, you know, like Polaroid, or because they merged into other companies, or they just became obsolete in their technology. And, you know, the ability of a company to withstand the test of time is pretty challenging. You know, I know I used to work with all sorts of technology companies back in the 80s that just don't exist anymore. And I think that in healthcare, this will be present, you know, whether, it, you know, which payers, which healthcare systems survive and are, as opposed to those who are overtaken by others, it'll be profound.
So biggest advice for entrepreneurs today, I know you're out meeting with startups all the time. Mm-hmm. You spend a lot of time helping startups. Mm-hmm. Any big advice that you always like to share with entrepreneurs?
With respect to accelerators?
No, just in general. In general, I mean, you know, and I also wanted to talk about your book as well. But
thank you.
You're spending so much mm-hmm. time and energy and have all this experience and have built companies. Love to, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs watch our show, so would love to pass some of that wisdom on.
You know, I think the thing that a lot of entrepreneurs don't understand well enough at the beginning is to really be self-critical about whether they're building a product or a company. And whether whatever they're building, product or company, you know, if they're here visiting me because they're looking for venture capital, that makes any sense at all. Because if you're a company that can grow to be $20 million in revenue, that's a really great thing, but not for venture companies to back. It's not big enough. You know, so finding alternative methods of building what might be a fantastic privately owned, you know, personal wealth creation machine, but not a big company that
a lifestyle for, company.
Yeah, lifestyle company.
So
which is
what kind
great,
of company do you want to build?
Yeah, what kind of company do you want to build? And are you really building a company, or is this a feature or a product? Be really honest with yourself, because I think a lot of times people aren't. Mm. I think the other thing that entrepreneurs fail to do is understand their competition. Oftentimes, they come in with, you know, cute little charts, the McKinsey style things.
Or they say they don't have any competition.
They don't have any competition, or they have, you know, this one competitor that's a dead-on competitor in the digital health field, for instance. But they don't think about the competitors that are in the traditional healthcare side, or the emerging competitors that are some completely different way of doing the same thing. And I think really being honest, you know, with yourself about those things is really, really important.
Or even activities that compete with you.
Exactly.
Because I think there's a lot of that out there. Yeah. Where it's like you're replacing something that's not a company.
Right.
Or competing with something
like
that's not a company.
Like people's jobs, who, by the way, other people might not want to replace.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at hospitals, and you know, you hear pitches all the time, I'm sure you guys do too, about companies that are going to, you know, cut down the workforce in hospitals by, you know, X percent. Well, you know, that's nice in theory, but first of all, that's probably the largest employer in the community. In many cases. So cutting all the jobs in a hospital can kill a community. They know that.
Sure.
And those hospitals, and they think about that because that's the same community that passes their bonds and, you know, that allows them to function. And it's really complicated, that economic dynamic. And I think failing to understand some of those, it always comes back to money, right? In the end, if you don't understand the economic imperatives on all fronts around your customer, you know, you can't make it.
So you just published a book.
Yeah.
What's it called? What's it about?
The book's called Tectonics, Can Entrepreneurs Heal Healthcare with Technology? I wrote it with Dr. David Shaywitz. The book is really a compilation of work of his and mine around technology and healthcare entrepreneurship, you know, and really from every sector of the healthcare economy. So from the perspective of entrepreneurs, from the perspective of physicians, hospitals, you know, life sciences folks, venture people, what have you, acquirers, thinking about the different aspects, you know, that go into that question about can entrepreneurs heal healthcare with technology? Of course, the answer is it depends. You know, sometimes you can make a really profound difference with technology, but that's not all, the entire answer in any case.
Who's the reader, the target reader of that? And it's going
aside really from my parents, about, you mean?
Yeah.
yeah, mostly. Well, really, anybody who's interested in healthcare technology. I mean, it's really.
But when you were writing it, was it? Do you think entrepreneurs were going to be lapping it up?
I think both investors and company side people. I mean, I think it really has
not as much entrepreneurs.
No, both. I think it's really appealed to both. I mean, I think the feedback I've got from both entrepreneurs and investors and corporate people is that it's applicable to them, and it seems to be getting pretty widely read, which is nice and exciting to see. And, you know, both David and I continue to write quite extensively on our various blogs, and he also writes for Forbes. So, I mean, I think just sort of getting your thoughts out there about healthcare and technology and investing and all that is a really valuable exercise. At least it has been for me.
Yeah, and then you got to make up the next stuff.
Exactly.
After you share everything you know. well, Lisa, we've known you for several years now, and I think it's funny when I was thinking about, we were kept adding to your bio, and we said, okay, author and consultant and adjunct professor and venture capitalist and venture capital consultant. And every time I keep thinking about my past experiences with you on stage, it was always you're an entertainer too.
Oh, well, thank you.
So there's like a comedian entertainer that needs to be, you know, wrapped around that whole thing.
If somebody would only pay me to write for the Daily Show, you know, that'd be my real choice.
Any last things that we didn't ask or didn't touch on about either the report or yourself that you'd like to leave us with, so that entrepreneurs at least can have a reason or others can have a reason to kind of dig into the report when it gets published?
Well, I guess I'd like to, you know, make sure that people take a look at my blog at venturevalkyrie.com. And I'd also just like to thank you guys for the opportunity to be here and to talk about this and to have this longstanding business relationship we've had together. I think it's really interesting what you're doing. And I remember meeting you when you first launched the firm and talked about starting 1,000 companies in healthcare. And it's been really interesting and fun to watch your evolution. So it's been fun getting to know you.
Would you believe we're coming up to, we'll be at 100 companies soon. So
it's amazing.
Very exciting.
One for every accelerator.
That's right.
Great.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today, and look forward to digging into the report. You can download the report at California Healthcare Foundation, and look forward to seeing you next time on Startup Health Now.